Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
In the early 1900s, certain companies were off-gassing highly toxic fluoride gases into the atmosphere. The surrounding communities began to get sick. Laws were enacted to compel these corporations to install scrubbers to convert these gases into fluorosilicic acid, still highly toxic, but containable. Now these companies had a stockpile of this poison, and there was no affordable way to dispose of it. Lucky for them, one of their major stockholders was also the Secretary of the Treasury, who was responsible for the Public Health Service at the time. And by 1950, the U.S. government began buying this toxic, untreated industrial waste product and dumping it into our drinking water. Reputable studies show that it's causing various cancers and other disease. With the Alexa Pure Pro, you can have clean drinking water and a remedy to this madness. Available now at InfoWarsStore.com.
Attention patriots. Tired of the tyranny and crime in the sanctuary cities? Flee the city and seek refuge in the American Redoubt. FleeTheCity.com. Move to the freedom of Idaho, Montana, or Wyoming. FleeTheCity.com. FleeTheCity.com.
You're listening to Resolution Radio. Radio. ResolutionRDO.com.
From the great state of Ohio, Buckeye Firearms Association presents Keep and Bear Radio, fighting for Second Amendment rights, calling out media lies, and telling the gun grabbers to come and take it. Now, Keep and Bear Radio.
It's not unusual for political campaigns to be competitive. But the race for the U.S. House of Representatives in Ohio's 2nd District includes 11 Republicans, all running for the same seat. Buckeye Firearms Association PAC has endorsed Shane Welkin in this race and for the second time awarded him a rare and coveted A-plus grade for his tireless leadership on Second Amendment issues. And that's what we're going to talk about on this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. I'm Dean Reek, Executive Director of Buckeye Firearms Association, and I'm joined by Senator Shane Welkin. Hi, Shane. Welcome to the podcast.
Dean, how are you? I know it's been a while. You surprised me with how long it's been.
Yeah, it's been about 2 years since you've been on the podcast. I think it was the last election when we talked. You know, at the beginning of these, I usually ask what people have been up to, what they've been doing, but I really don't have to ask you that because I already know you're busy running your campaign for the upcoming Ohio primary on March 19th. How's that going?
So, so far it's going really, really well. It's a big primary, you know, it's an open seat. So therefore we have, we've got several people running. But I am really proud of our team. What we're being able to accomplish when it's an open primary, there's a lot of reluctance for some people to get involved. But I've gave the pitch that, hey, you either get involved now or you don't get a say because this is the most Republican district in the state of Ohio. So the odds are, unless you do something terribly wrong, the winner of this primary should be the next congressman from Southern Ohio.
So, Shane, you're running for the U.S. House seat in the 2nd district, and that's... Help me out here. That's like Adams County, Brown, Claremont, Pickaway. It's a big swath down there in Southern Ohio.
15 full counties, and then a couple townships out of Fayette County. It's a big, big district from Claremont all the way over to Meigs and then up as high as Pickaway.
And you had just talked about, you know, it being an open primary. You have Last time I looked, 10 other Republicans in this field. Has anybody dropped out yet? Or is, I mean, that's going to be a lot of people on the ballot.
Yeah, that's one of the challenges. There's no doubt about that. But no one's dropped out, and including myself, you're correct. There's 11 people on the ballot, including me. So 10 other candidates than myself. But, we're excited because we're the only candidate in the race with any legislative experience that actually lives in the district. So, and I think that's important when you're talking about representing Southern Ohio, being here, living here, growing up here, understanding the people, understanding what's important, the things we cherish, the things we value. I don't think you get that from miles away. I think you get that from being right here in the heart of the second district. And that's where I live.
So Buckeye Firearms Association, PAC, has endorsed you, given you an A-plus grade, which is actually pretty hard to come by. You know, there's a big difference between A and A-plus. The plus basically means, yeah, you voted for our bills, but you've gone way beyond that. And very seldom do we give that out. You have a 100% voting record. You've taken the lead, championed Second Amendment issues. When it came to constitutional carry, you really put up the good fight there. I mean, you had law enforcement groups testifying against this, gun control advocates showing up in droves. You even had some people in your own caucus who were trying to kill this bill, and you kept fighting for it. So I just have to ask, we have a lot of legislators who vote for bills. That's very good, very helpful for our cause. But why do you have such a passion for the Second Amendment so that you go above and beyond to earn an A-plus rating like you did?
Well, first of all, I appreciate Buckeye Firearms. I appreciate their endorsement. I really appreciate the A-plus rating. And I guess, it is, I hope this doesn't sound bad. I wouldn't say I go above and beyond. I just do what I think is right and hold tight to what you believe. So, it's crazy campaign time. So you see all kinds of things with everybody wants to pose with a gun and do that sort of thing. But it'd be interesting if you talk to someone and say, well, what's the last thing you shot? What's the last time you actually hunted? And I can tell you, I got to duck hunt up in Lake Erie not terribly long ago, and it's a lot of fun. It's anything with feathers is one of my favorite things. So I just kind of grew up and was drawn to hunting and shooting. I enjoy it. My wife shoots a little bit. She's still learning, but our girls enjoy shooting. I have 13, 14 year old daughters. And while with me being on the road so much campaigning, we don't get to do it as much as we'd like. But I think that's what it boils down to. It's understanding what the Second Amendment's for, why we have firearms. It can be for sport. It can be for entertaining, the shooting. Of course, I'm sure if you shoot with your buddies, if somebody happens to be a little off, there's absolutely no ribbing that goes on. So the guys that I hunt with, that I've hunted with for years, we all still hunt together. And if you're not having a good day, you can count on them to try and make it worse for you, because they're going to be all over you. And then it boils down to, when you look at the Second Amendment, I love, there's a meme out there that says it wasn't created because the deer were coming. When they all say, why do you need this to hunt? Why do you need that to hunt? Well, there's other reasons as well. And you and I both know what those are, as well as all your listeners. We have the right to protect ourselves. And I tell people every time I get a chance, I say, we live in the greatest country on the face of the earth. Hands down, no questions asked. With all the problems that we have, it is still, without question, the greatest place to live. My wife gets a chuckle when I say, I don't see anybody in the Florida Keys hopping in a boat, hoping to float to Cuba. That doesn't happen. They all want to come here, and I don't blame them. It is the great spot. But one of the reasons it's so great is the freedoms we have, and the guarantee we have to protect our freedoms with our right to own and keep firearms. And I think that's it's something that we can't ever move away from. It's what separates us from the rest of the world, frankly.
Yeah, I agree with you. You probably don't know, Shane, but I used to live in Europe. I lived over there when I was young, in Germany in particular. I visited countries all over the world. Yeah, the laws are very, very different. It's interesting how similar everyone is. But when you get down to details like firearms or, you know, little interesting things in the culture. They're very different. So I think a lot of people don't really understand, if you haven't traveled widely, if you haven't gone to other countries and seen what it's really like, you really can't compare. So I think it's hard for some people to understand who just sit here in the United States and complain. Well, you know, maybe you should spend some time traveling around the world and then compare it to here, and the kind of things you're complaining about maybe seem a little silly or a little overblown, you know. So I would encourage people to travel a little bit, especially to some of the countries that we call third world countries, where I've been and have just been astonished once you get out of the tourist areas what they're really like. So, you know, I share your enthusiasm. I love that I live here. A lot of great countries around the world, but this is the one that I would choose if I were going to make a choice. So I want to get some more details on your campaign. I know that we want to talk about, you know, gun stuff, but just more broadly, why are you running for this seat? You know, that's always the question. You have a position now in Ohio. You've done a lot of great work. I'm sure there are other things you could do here, but you're running for a seat in the federal government. And why? Why did you make that decision?
Well, the first thing I'd want to tell you is we didn't take it lightly. It wasn't a knee-jerk reaction because, oh my gosh, this is an open congressional seat and you really need to get in and run. We didn't do that. As with all the positions I ran for, as I mentioned, I have my wife, Christy, and my two daughters, Piper and Parker. This was there was a lot of family discussion about this. I actually got kind of fortunate after Congressman Winstrup announced that he was retiring. And for the record, I'm a big fan of Congressman Winstrup. I was very surprised when he decided to retire and step away. And frankly, this is nothing I ever thought I would do. It just didn't really cross my mind. But I had the chance to go to a conference, which was nice because after he'd announced, I got a lot of phone calls, had a lot of people encouraging me to run, had a lot of people giving me advice of what to think about, what not to think about. And I got away for a couple of days where it was just me. My phone wasn't, you know, I could turn my phone off. And when the downtime for the conference, I could sit in my room and think or read or just got some time, which was really important to me. And talked to some really close friends to get advice, and then looked at some of the folks that were in. And I would tell you, there's some very nice folks that are in the race. I don't know all of them really, really well. Frankly, I don't know any of them really well, but I've got to know them a little bit here as we campaign. So nothing bad to say against them and their experiences. I just felt when I looked at it, I bring such a unique set of skills and experience to this that it puts me in a great spot. I think without question, my qualifications and experience from being in a legislative body and understanding the legislative process, being able to build coalitions and how to move forward and how to get things done. You know, you mentioned when I was chairing government oversight in the House, you know, there was some opposition to a bill that I thought was a good bill that we eventually got through. It was, you know, Buckeye's top priority. And we were able to get it, but you got to learn how to navigate the landmines and get people to where we need to be to get good legislation passed. And when I looked at that, I thought, I'm going to get in, and my family was behind me to do it, to serve and try and move our country forward as we have back to my county government days and to my days in state government. So that's the reason to try and get in and do everything we can to right the ship, because we're in a bit of trouble right now. There's no doubt.
So what are your priorities? And again, we'll get to some gun stuff here in a minute, but just overall, sure. What are your priorities when you get there and you sit in the seat? What is it that you're hoping to accomplish? I'm sure you have a plan, you know, like your top five, top seven, whatever things that you want to do. What are those?
Well, I think you'll probably hear this from a lot of people across the country, especially in hard red districts like Ohio's 2nd Congressional District. But we have a huge immigration issue, and the things coming across our southern border are, I tell people, I'm like, they're costing us lots and lots of capital. And I'm not just talking about the cost, the crime, the court cost, the local services cost, the benefits cost that some of these illegals are getting. we're also losing human capital because they're bringing across a lot of drugs. I go back to the crime, the attacks. There's been murders all through illegal immigration. So at all costs, we've got to get specifically that southern border secure. The second thing follows right up with that, that I think is just as big a problem, is I think the number is right around 12 million illegal immigrants have come across the border since Joe Biden's been in office. 12 million. That's the state, that's bigger than the state of Ohio. I'm just afraid we don't know who's here. We don't know where they're at, and we don't know what they're doing. And I'm afraid they're not here for good intentions. There is, without question in my mind, groups of people who have been able to get over that have assembled somewhere. And I think planning bad things for us here on our soil. And that is something we're going to have to figure out how to deal with. And when I've been asked, hey, are you willing to take a vote to say, if you came across illegally, when we track you down and find you, you've got to go back. And my answer to that is, yes, I am. You do have to go back. If your first act coming here is to break the law, then you're going to have to go back. I've had people ask me, do I think the immigration process needs revamped? The honest answer to that is I've never been through the immigration process. I've never dealt with it at the state level. So my guess is, yes, it probably does. There's probably a way to do it quicker. There's probably a way to be more secure with it. But the bottom line is it's got to be done correct. You've got to come in. We do need immigrants. We do need immigration of people coming here to work and do things. We've got a lot of open jobs right now, but it can't start with breaking the law. Let's get the border secure and have people come over in a proper way. So that would be that's probably like 1, 2, 3 right there. The next thing is inflation. And where I think I'm uniquely qualified is a root cause of inflation is cost of energy. And if you don't have cheap and available energy, the cost of everything goes up. As soon as it costs more to make something, as soon as it costs more to transport something, all those costs are just passed along and bumped on and on and on, up and up and up. And I think that's a big problem that we're seeing right now. I mean, obviously inflation, but I don't think people are thinking, oh, we're just printing money, we're just doing this, we're just doing that. But a lot of it comes from, you know, 4 years ago, we were energy independent. We didn't need anything from anybody else. In fact, we were exporting energy. You come to now, well, it was Biden's first day in office, cut down the Keystone Pipeline. They've stuck to the Obama policies of, you can build a coal plant. We're just going to make sure you're broke by the time you get there. And right now we need coal plants. We need nuclear plants. We need gas plants. We need baseload energy and we need oil production here domestically so that we're not dependent on those across in the Middle East that down deep in their hearts don't really like us. And sending them money is foolish when we've got the assets and the resources right here.
Well, I don't want to get too far off the topic of this podcast, but I got to tell you, I'm a big fan of nuclear because, yeah. you know, whether you buy into global warming or not, one way or another, we need energy and we need a lot of it. More and more things are electrified. You know, I just put in a heat pump, and I got to tell you, it uses a lot of energy, especially when it gets really cold. So, you know, the same people who are talking about global warming are absolutely against nuclear energy, and I think that's the only way to really produce big electric and to do it quickly with some of the newer technology. I think people are still living in the 70s, you know, with the China syndrome, you know, the Jane Fonda movie, and that's just not nuclear today. You know, it's very safe, very clean, and if we just deregulate a little bit to allow those plants to be built, I think we could solve a lot of issues for a lot of people. But again, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. I'm just kind of putting a bug in your ear about nuclear.
Yeah, no,
I think that's, I think I agree that's, with you. That's the way forward.
Yeah, I agree. Nuclear is a great option. It is 96-98% efficient, and it's carbon free. And it can crank out baseload energy 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at a great rate. And it's the fact of a lot of people that are against nuclear, that are against gas, that are against coal, but they want to charge their electric car And I can tell you right now, the way the electric generation is going off the grid and just being replaced, and I understand we're getting off our main topic, but PJM, which is our regional transmission organization, they're telling us by 2030, we're going to need more energy than we can produce, because everything in the queue coming up is either it's renewable. It's mostly solar, 90 some percent solar. Well, if you're trying to charge your car at night, good luck, because there's last time I looked, there's not a lot of sunlight at night.
This is Ohio. My sister lives in Las Vegas. So solar's pretty good out there, although they have hydro. But here in Ohio, it's exactly the opposite of out there. You know, I can probably count on a couple of hands how many days of really good sun we get here in Ohio. So, I'm all for that. Shane, let's just pause for a minute. Sure. And I probably should have asked you this earlier in the podcast. Just personally, what's your background? I mean, we've worked with you in the legislature, but just on a personal basis, you know, what do you do? What have you done for a living? You know, where did you graduate? You know, what's your background?
So I'm just a kid from Southern Ohio, from Highland County, graduated from a little high school called Lynchburg Clay. Went to work at my dad's business that he eventually sold. And I got a real estate background. So I do keep my real estate license active, although I tell everybody I'm of the realtors, all the realtors, I'm their favorite, because I pay my dues and I don't sell or list anything because I'm so busy at the state, but I keep everything active in the hopes that maybe I will. So I have that in my background. We used to do a lot of investing and things like that. But I always tell something a little bit different than anybody else. Probably you find at the state house is I was a heavy equipment operator for a while. So I worked for a gentleman who I like to say it says a lot, because he's still very supportive of me. And he goes, I appreciate the fact that you've been on both sides of it. You know what it's like to work, and you know what it's like to be and negotiate in Columbus for us. And he's always been a very great supporter of mine. I ran a 943 Cat track loader, and we dug basements, poured footers, and poured walls. So when it comes to doing that, I have slung my share of concrete, and I've got a lot of time in the seat. He actually still has the old loader that I ran. He's got new ones now, but he goes, I just keep that old one. And on our old farm, he let me rent it from him, and I cut some trails in for my girls to ride four-wheelers on. So I told him when I took the loader back, I said, you know, the difference between what I'm doing now and what I just did for the last couple of days is every evening when I got off the loader, I could see what I accomplished. And at the state house, sometimes it's a little longer before you can see what you got accomplished. So that's my background in a snapshot. I try to keep things pretty simple, and I think that serves me well in the legislature.
So now let's turn to the Second Amendment and gun rights. Let's assume that you're going to get elected, and you're going to be at the federal government in the House. You know that we were having a lot of problems at the federal level with the Biden administration. What can you do when you get there about gun rights, fighting against gun control, and all of that? Because, you know, if anybody looks at the number of bills introduced at the federal level, I think their head would spin. Hundreds of bills every year, and a lot of those are gun control bills. Most of them don't go anywhere. But Shane, when you get there, what is it that you personally can do to fight that gun control and to protect gun rights for the 4 million gun owners here in Ohio?
So, Dean, that's a great question. And the answer I'm going to give you is probably a little different than what some were expecting. But I think the number one thing we've got to do is we've got to reach out to those 50-50 districts, and we've got to work, and we've got to get majorities. We've got to get Republican conservative majorities in the House and in the Senate. And frankly, we need the White House back. I think that's where a lot of this starts, is to be able to keep those bills down, to keep them out. The second thing I say is education, getting people educated about what you and I do with guns, whether it's target practice, whether it's hunting if you're a deer hunter and you hunt for meat, whatever it might be, If you're a, you know, I think I told you earlier, anything with feathers, that's my favorite. Ducks, geese, quail, pheasant, turkey, dove, although dove can be a bit humiliating at times when they go zipping by you. You know, educating people as to what we do and why we do it. We're not it's not a group of a bunch of crazy people that are just looking to have their concealed carry and carry guns in and wreak havoc. And it's the wild, wild west. And, you know, as well as I do, every time we did a gun measure here in Ohio, when we first went to concealed carry, there's going to be blood on the streets. It's going to be chaos. It's going to be terrible. Well, we have the data that says that's not true. When we did stand your ground, people are just going to be shooting people right and left for being on their property. I think we have the data to say that's not true. We have permitless carry or constitutional carry, whatever you want to refer to it as here in Ohio. That's going to be terrible. We're not going to know. We're going to know this. You know, people are going to be doing this. People are going to be doing that. Well, unless you're aware of something I'm not aware of, since we passed that last GA, I've not heard terrible, awful things happening because of permitless carry.
Well, no.
So I think those are the big thing.
Yeah, now all of a sudden, you know, the gun control advocates are a big fan of our concealed handgun license, right? When we were first passing that back in 2004, 2005, people were talking, you know, blood in the streets. But now they seem to be a big fan of having people carry with a license. So it's interesting how the arguments change once people find out what the truth really is. So I've been seeing a lot of misreporting in the media and a lot of politicians saying some things like the qualifications for having a gun have completely changed in Ohio, that anybody can have a gun, anybody can carry a gun. Apparently, they don't really read the bills. Shane, one of the big things that we're having a problem with in the country right now is with prosecutors. And I'm sure that you've been following this. There is a concerted effort to have rogue prosecutors around the country who just are not prosecuting crimes. Now, I consider that a Second Amendment issue because every time that, you know, a terrible crime is committed, it comes back on us. That's when people want to pass these really bad bills that are going to affect gun owners. So you're familiar with this problem, like in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, these prosecutors get elected. They do not want to prosecute misdemeanors. They push for the elimination of cash bail. They're basically taking even violent criminals and putting them right back out onto the street. And I don't quite get the idea of passing new gun laws when they don't want to enforce the laws that are already on the books. But that's what we're facing right now. So again, I'm going to ask, when you're in office, when you take that seat at the federal level, what could you do to address this problem?
Well, you hate to say it, Dean, but I think lots of things boil down to, as they do in almost all things, the dollars attached. And if you have cities, if you have prosecutors, if you have attorney generals that say, hey, we're going to make it a practice in this state that we're not going to prosecute this stuff. Well, if you're not going to prosecute as much, maybe you don't need as much federal assistance for X, Y, or Z. You know, it's everyone said it shouldn't be about money, but if you boil most things down, that's where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. Control policy through measures other than true legislation is what I see here with these folks. They're going to back you into a corner by allowing all these other things to happen, and then come claiming to you that it's all because of law abiding gun owners that these terrible things are happening. You know as well as I do, you can look at the cities and the states with the most restrictive gun laws, and what do they have? The highest crime.
Is there something that could be done legislatively to basically force prosecutors to enforce the law, to apply the law that we have on the books? I know the prosecutors, they need a certain amount of latitude on what they're going to prosecute, but if they're just not enforcing the law, I would think that something could be done about that.
Dean, that's a great question, because I thought it was the duty of the federal government to make sure people coming into this country were coming in legally as well, and there's nothing being done about that at the executive level. So that's a question yet to be seen, is what could we do there?
So the other big issue at the federal level is the ATF, And we've seen basically this administration, the Biden administration, weaponizing the ATF. And it seems like what their goal is to just dismantle the firearm industry from the bottom up. You know, they've got this, what they call a zero tolerance policy. And they're taking away the licenses of gun dealers over clerical errors. So, for example, when you run a background check, you need a 9-digit number. Well, if the gun dealer mistakenly omits a number, just puts in 8 numbers, their license can be revoked for failing to run a background check. So there's really no room for human error. I can't believe that this is just by coincidence, because when we started reporting on this about a year ago, the ATF was revoking maybe 40 or so firearm licenses a year. And right after Biden declared war on these so-called rogue gun dealers, as they refer to them, the ATF revocations went up about 500%. So I don't think this is a coincidence. I think they're just trying to get rid of firearms dealers. So what, you know, this is the ATF basically exceeding its authority, going way beyond what they're supposed to do. Again, I'll throw the same question at you. What do you think could be done at the federal level to rein in an agency like this, which is not supposed to be making law or deciding on policy?
So I'm going to throw it right back to what I just said. It's, we can't get the law passed. We can't get the law changed. We're not going to, they truly don't believe in the Second Amendment. They don't think it says what it says. I actually just looked at it and read it the other day again, and it's pretty simple. It says our right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, the public's right. So what they're going to say is, well, if we can't infringe your right to bear arms, we're going to do everything we can to make sure you can't acquire one by getting rid of as many dealers as we can. You get rid of dealers, you get rid of access, price goes up, makes it harder for people to buy. I don't need to tell you it's that. The current federal government has weaponized every single agency they possibly can to push a far left liberal agenda. Whether it's the FBI, whether it's the justice system, whether it's ATF, whether, you can go on with all the acronyms you want, the three-letter acronyms of whatever agency it may be. And we're just going to have to get to a spot where these people, these directors, these agents are called on the carpet in front of Congress to say, why? You're going to have to tell me why. Who told you to do this? And does it make sense that, you know, a guy forgot a number, or a guy put avenue instead of street, and therefore you're saying he was trying to slide somebody through that shouldn't get a weapon? You know, the clerical errors you speak of. It's ridiculous the way they've taken it, and it's a shame, because what does it do in the end? It erodes the public trust and all these agencies that should be there in the time that someone needs, or in the time of a crime or things like that. And now the public doubts them. They don't trust them. There's always the second guessing. And don't get me wrong, our like a lot of local law enforcement, I think the majority of them do a great job. But the other side won't exploit the one mistake someone makes as the way it is for everyone. And I love when I'm sure you've seen these shows where they take someone who is upset with the police and they put them in different situations and they say, all right, you got to decide whether to shoot or not shoot. They usually walk away from that with a whole different perspective. Yeah, I think it's shameful what they've done with the agencies, and that's going to be something that's going to have to be addressed in Congress. And I would look forward to doing that once, if I'm fortunate enough to be chosen by the people to represent them in D.C.
So, Shane, as we're recording this, early in-person and mail-in voting is underway in Ohio, and mm-hmm. the primary election is coming up on March 19. So if any of you live in the 2nd U.S. House District, I encourage you to vote for our guest, Shane Welkin. Our PAC has given him an A-plus on gun rights and our enthusiastic endorsement, and you can see all of our other grades and endorsement at BuckeyeFirearms.org. Shane, we're about at the end of the podcast. Is there anything else you'd like to say about your campaign, about gun rights, what your plans are? I'm just going to open it up, and you can say anything you want.
All right, Dean. Well, first of all, I want to say thank you for having me on again. I hope you don't wait 2 years to invite me back. It's always a pleasure to be on. I love talking about guns and shooting. And what I would tell people, especially those that live in the second congressional district, is I know for a fact your TV, your radio, your mailbox have been flooded with all kinds of mailers, all kinds of commercials, all kinds of ads. And some people are saying, but I'm not seeing much of yours. Well, I can assure you the one thing that I do lack in my campaign is we do not have the biggest checkbook. But we do, while we don't, we may not have the most wealth, we do have the most wealth of experience and knowledge. And I can assure your members and the folks listening that if you're in the second district and you you decide to put a check mark by name to be your next congressman, that I will do everything I can for our region as I have in the House and in the state Senate. You would have a friend when it comes to gun rights and gun ownership and the ability to access and the ability to enjoy the outdoors. I'm very proud to be the chairman of the Sportsman's Caucus here in Ohio as well. So I would just ask either now or before March 19th, I would love to have their support and their vote. They can go to ShaneWilkin.com to get more information. They can email me from there if they want to ask me a specific question. I'm happy to always happy to answer. It's a crazy busy time right now. We're driving all over, but you may have to give me a 2 or 3 days to get back to you, but we'll try and get back to you as quick as we can. And then outside of that, I just want to again thank Buckeye Firearms for their support and their leadership in the state when it comes to gun ownership and gun rights. We're lucky to have the group here in Ohio, and it's always a pleasure to work with you. So thank you so much for having me on.
Well, Shane, thanks for spending some time with us on the podcast. Good luck with the campaign, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Appreciate it, Dean. Thank you, sir.
That's all for this episode of Keep and Bear Radio. If you enjoyed the podcast, I urge you to subscribe. And please subscribe to the Buckeye Firearms Association newsletter at buckeyefirearms.org. If you'd like to become a member and support the work of BFA, go to joinbfa.org. Use the discount code PODCAST to get $10 off your membership. That's joinbfa.org. We'll see you next time on Keep and Bear Radio.
You're listening to Resolution Radio, Radio, Radio.
ResolutionRDO.com.
Today's story, the latest arrest in Charlottesville Tiki Torch lawfare campaign, is Patriot Front's Thomas Rousseau. Charlottesville, Virginia. Patriot Front leader Thomas Rousseau was arrested over a felony warrant out of Virginia this weekend, making him the latest in a long list of pro-white activists still being prosecuted for events allegedly stemming from the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville. Rousseau, the revered nationalist figure known for his cowboy aesthetics and grand drum-led marches throughout the United States, was booked into McLennan County Jail on Friday evening. Thanks to an ancient anti-Klan law that prosecutors allege Rousseau broke during the iconic torchlit march, he could face up to 5 years in prison if convicted. In response, his organization has called it a 7-year witch hunt by politically motivated prosecutors. Rousseau's arrest comes after a nearly 7-year witch hunt by politically motivated prosecutors, stemming from the events that transpired at the Unite the Right rally in 2017, read a statement from Patriot Front made to its official Telegram page. Rousseau faces a fabricated felony charge for burning objects with intent to intimidate. This is the burden that American patriots must bear. Patriot Front will continue to organize and work in the nation's cause unimpeded, it continued. While Unite the Right may have ended over 7 years ago, high-profile politicians, prosecutors, and other anti-white extremists have continued to use the event to attack all of its roughly 300 attendees.
Today's story, patriotic alternative Sam Melia
was sentenced to 2 years in prison for an anti-white hate conviction. Sam Melia has been sentenced to 2 years in prison, effective immediately, according to Patriotic Alternative head Mark Collett. The sentence comes amid a guilty verdict of inciting racial hatred over truthful and legal stickers last month, and will now result in Melia missing the birth of his second child. Outrage over the harsh sentence can already be witnessed on social media. The White Papers Policy Institute called the move a ridiculous injustice and urged people to donate to a GiveZengo linked to the Melia family. Sam Melia, a husband, father, activist, and dedicated advocate for the native British, has just been sentenced to 2 years in prison because he produced and placed stickers warning about demographic change in Britain, read a post to WPPI's official Telegram page. Telling the truth about demographic change and cultural differences between peoples will now land you in prison. Laura Melia Towler and her daughter are now without Sam. There is a GiveZengo to support Sam and Laura. They are a wonderful nationalist couple expecting their second child, all while having to deal with this ridiculous injustice. In a world where the state, media, and justice systems are against us at every turn, nationalists must come together and be a family, a true support network, it continued.
Today's story. Transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale is spared an extremism classification by the ADL. Nashville, Tennessee. The Anti-Defamation League refused to classify transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale as a left-wing extremist because she once penned the word faggots in her manifesto. The decision to exclude Hale from the list came amid a recent ADL report that claimed right-wing extremism was the source of all extremism-related shootings in 2023. Transgender mass shooter Audrey Hale, who murdered six people, including 3 9-year-old children inside a Christian school, did so because of a violent hatred towards white children, according to pages of her now-leaked manifesto. Hale had transitioned into the opposite sex, calling herself Aiden, and penned multiple journals and diaries outlining her hatred of white people. Kill those kids, those crackers. Going to private fancy schools with those fancy khakis and sports backpacks with their daddy's Mustangs and convertibles? Fuck you little shits, her writing said. Despite her apparent anti-white animus, however, the ADL believes that there was no clear evidence of extremism behind the Hale shooting. Instead, they believe the shooting was born from a perceived class struggle or mental illness. The ADL also appears to use the presence of faggots in her writings as a convenient way to exonerate Hale of a left-wing extremist classification. For more news like this, visit justicereport.news and subscribe to our Telegram, Substack, and Odyssey to keep up to date on all the latest headlines from around the world. Become a paid supporter and gain access to our full archive of audio articles and enjoy the Justice Report on the go.
Listen, do you hear that sound? It started low, but it's getting progressively louder. Into a crescendo, even louder. Irresistible, ending in an ear-splitting blast of mass disruption. That's the sound of America's economic and political systems crashing to the ground. But we have a plan. We will be ready to restore political sanity. We will be ready to answer the call of productive America. We will restore America's industrial base and put America back to work. We will shut down political correctness and restore decency and positive media to America. We will save our Constitution, our traditional way of life, our customs, and religion. We will restore sound money and crush the debt-based system of monetary slavery. And we will end America's foreign misadventures. We are the American Freedom Party, and we have a plan. Learn more about us, the American Freedom Party, .us.
Thanks for listening to Project Schoolyard Volume 2. For more information about the project, as well as lyric to the songs on this CD, please visit www.tightrope.cc. You can also find jokes, news articles, a photo gallery, free CD downloads, and a secure online shopping cart. We carry a full line of flags, t-shirts, CDs, books, stickers, and other products of interest to racially conscious white people. Please visit www.tightrope.cc.
What would your life be like if you woke up each morning with new vitality, feeling better than you have in years, and you noticed a difference in your sleeping patterns, blood sugar levels, and had a sense of well-being overall? There's something that is changing thousands of people's lives, and you could be one of them. It's called Heart and Body Extract. Sharon Harris, co-creator of Heart and Body Extract, talks about the positive effects of Heart and Body Extract.
What happens with the formula Heart and Body Extract is it's giving the body the necessary vitamins, minerals, amino acids, enzymes, and phytonutrients so the body will heal itself. And yes, the body does have the ability to balance blood pressure, balance cholesterol, clean and unclog the arteries. It can also work on balancing the circulation for diabetics. So the body is an amazing thing. It simply needs some help so it has the tools to heal itself.
Heart and Body Extract gets results. To order your 2-month supply, call now, toll free at 866-295-5305. Order online at hbextract.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Lockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. LockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at LockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. LockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
At Antelope Hill is proud to announce the release of a new translation, Leon Degrell in Exile, by José Luis Jerez Reisco. Readers of The Burning Souls will already be familiar with Degrell's life before and during the Second World War, his service on the Eastern Front, and his involuntary post-war exile in Franco's Spain. This new work tells the story of his life in exile in detail, replete with first-hand accounts from Spanish nationalists and friends of Degrell. During his time in Spain, Degrell did not wallow in sadness. Despite the atrocities inflicted upon him and his family by the victorious Allied powers, he stayed remarkably active in European nationalist politics and left a lasting impression on both his personal friends and those from around the European world who took inspiration from his tenacious idealism. Degrell's enduring legacy in Spain is well deserved. Such a legacy also deserves to be spread to both sides of the Atlantic and beyond. Antelope Hill is proud to be the first to bring this unparalleled biography to the English reader. Get Leon Degrell in Exile today at antelopehillpublishing.com.
Yeah.